Welcome to Coastal Cafe. I'm Marianne Wagner, your host today. Coastal Cafe is a joint production of Washington Sea Grant at the University of Washington College of the Environment and KPTZ 91.9 FM. Today we have Robert Sudar, a longtime Washington State fisherman with us, and he is now a salmon wholesaler working with local fishermen along the Columbia River, marketing a variety of salmon and sturgeon from the Columbia River gillnet fishery to consumers in Washington State. Welcome, Robert.
Thank you.
You live in Longview, Washington, along the Columbia River. And the fishermen you work with, where do they fish?
Most of them are fishermen along the Columbia River. For this season, they primarily fish between the lower river down towards the mouth and up as far as the Washougal area. And those who are full-time fishermen also fish in Alaska. Some of them fish in Bristol Bay and some fish in the Cook Inlet area.
In Washington grocery stores, we see Alaska seafood quite often, but there is an active and healthy commercial fishing industry in Washington State as well. Is that right?
Yes, that's true. It's not nearly as much of an abundant harvester as it was in years past, primarily because some of the seasons have been cut short. ESA listings have made some impacts. We've lost access to some stocks, but there is still a viable commercial fishery for salmon. But it's hard for grocery stores to market them because the reality is that they set up their ads quite a ways in advance, with more certainty from Alaska than what we can provide for our fisheries in Washington. And so primarily our fish show up on the market as specials and things like that, or limited time availability sort of opportunities, rather than something that you'll see advertised in an ad.
Well, I think that most of our seafood gets exported. I've heard that. Is that true?
I think that depends on the species. Like a lot of our seafood nowadays, including a lot of the fish caught in Alaska, gets sent to China for reprocessing and then brought back to the United States. And so in that regard, a lot of it's exported, but there's still a lot of it that is consumed at some point in the United States. In Washington, a fair amount of our Dungeness crab fishery off the coast is exported. I don't think much of our salmon gets exported. Certainly in the Chum fishery in Puget Sound, the roe gets exported. But on the Columbia, most of our salmon is consumed locally or at least regionally.
Well, tell us a little bit more about the types of seafood fishermen are catching along Washington's coastline. You just mentioned a few of them. Are there any other types that are commonly caught?
Yeah, the rockfish fishery is something that's been rebuilt in the last 20 years. After some concerns about the health of the stocks, the fishing was cut back significantly, and now those are abundant again. And the fillets are available in a lot of different places in the market every week, pretty much year round. They're relatively inexpensive, probably one of the least expensive things in the seafood case, and they are very versatile. They can be used in a lot of different recipes. And so that's something that's become quite abundant. Salmon, of course, there's some of that seasonally. And we talked about Dungeness crab already. Spot prawns are another resource. So there are several species and a little bit of like black cod and halibut, but the majority of those come from Alaska.
Well, you know, that's great to know that we have such great variety, right, in Washington State.
There's a lot more commercial fishing going on than people realize locally, but it hasn't typically been publicized or marketed effectively.
And when we talk about commercial fishing in Washington, we're not always talking about big corporations. Washington's fishing industry consists of small family-run businesses with one or two boats, and often the boats and their businesses are handed down from generation to generation. With whole communities along the coast and up the river as fishing families. Is that right?
Yeah, that's very true. The processors might be large corporations, but the fishermen themselves are mostly small businesses. They Could be a father and son duo that work on the same boat, or maybe they each have boats. They're might be involved in several different fisheries. And in many cases, it's been a tradition thing. There are some fishermen on the river here on the Columbia that can trace their family's involvement in fisheries here back four and five generations. The fisherman that I worked with as a fisherman when I was getting out of high school had gotten the boat from his father. And they're very much family businesses.
You work in the Columbia Gillnet Fishery, which is another fishing community. Describe for our listeners that are new to fishing terms what the Columbia Gillnet Fishery is.
So the Columbia River fishery was, I believe, the oldest non-tribal salmon fishery in Washington. It started back in the 1860s. It was mostly started by immigrants from Scandinavia and Croatia, some Italian immigrants, some Greek immigrants, but Scandinavians, the Finnish community is quite strong along the Columbia River. They brought their culture and their trade basically with them from Europe, and they found a way to apply that here on the Columbia River. The development of the fishery here coincided with the development of the canning industry, which was a real boon to the fishery here. And the Columbia is a huge producer. It's the largest producer of Chinook salmon on the coast. It still is. It doesn't produce nearly as much as it used to, but it still is the biggest biggest Chinook producer on the Pacific coast. It has significant coho runs in some years. It has a sockeye run. It has salmon in all seasons, really. There are spring Chinook, summer Chinook, fall Chinook. There's very few months of the year when salmon aren't present in the Columbia. So it was. It has quite a long history. And as I mentioned, some of those families can trace their involvement back many generations.
You know, that's fascinating. I don't think that's a well-known fact people who eat seafood in the urban areas. That's really great to know about the Columbia River fishery. But can you tell us a little bit more about what is a gillnet and how does it differ from other types of fishing?
So gillnetting is one of the probably three primary methods of harvesting salmon, along with purse seines and trolling with a hook and line. Gillnetting is using a net made up of finer threads than what would be used in a purse seine fishery, so that the fish can't see it, and they'll swim into the net and they'll get tangled either by their gill cover or perhaps by their body and be retained as the net's brought in and the fisherman can remove them from the net. It's pretty versatile in that you can change the size of those openings to target the fish you're seeking. We can use large mesh nets, which would have an opening, like if you think of a net as having four knots and you pull two opposite and stretch them as far apart, that opening is measured in terms of inches, 4 or 5, up to 9 inches. And so like you might use an 8 or 9 inch net to fish for Chinook, but that size net allows smaller fish to pass through, like coho salmon or steelhead. And so it's very versatile in that regard. And you can also use small mesh net to avoid catching larger fish like Chinook. Depends on what you're seeking. And you can make it in a lot of different formats. I guess that's not the best word, but a lot of different configurations so that it can adapt to the river for a high river, a low river, different kinds of river bottoms. It's a really versatile kind of gear. And it's very common. It isn't just here on the Columbia by any means. It's the primary harvest method in Bristol Bay, which is the largest sockeye fishery in the world. It's the primary fishery in Copper River, which is probably the most famous salmon fishery in the world. And it's in Cook Inlet, Southeast Alaska. There are a lot of places where gillnets are used effectively and appropriately.
So gill netting is really flexible and works in a river scenario very well.
Yes, it really is a good fit on the Columbia. And also because it's typically a 1 or 2 man operation. And for Chinook, you aren't expecting to have a lot of fish harvested at a time. Like if you're fishing for sockeye or pink salmon or some of those species, they will sometimes be in large schools where they are. It's appropriate to use another type of gear like a purse seine. But in Chinook fisheries, they are almost always gillnet fisheries because they're smaller in number, but they're high enough value that the fishermen can make a reasonable catch and a reasonable income in that business. So gillnetting fits, it fits the conditions of the river, it fits the configuration of the river, and you can also adjust when and where you fish. So if you know that it's a time of year when a certain stock is prevalent that you don't want to catch, you just don't fish. You try to, and that's what we actually do here. We're not fishing right now because the stocks in the river are ones that we want to avoid, but we were fishing a few weeks ago on early returning salmon runs that were healthy, but we weren't interacting with the critical stocks, which come a little bit later. So it's a great fit for the river.
Hmm. Would you say that the Columbia River fishery, where you focus your work, is a little unique in that it is managed by both Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission and the Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission in coordination with the treaty tribes and has what is called a Columbia River Compact?
Yeah, so that is pretty unique. Certainly there are other fisheries that have joint management, but on the Columbia, the compact has been in place for over 100 years. And it's a challenging fishery to manage, but the compact has been a success in working with those three groups, the two states and the tribes, to protect the stocks at risk and to still harvest significant numbers of healthy runs. And they aren't always in agreement, but in general, it's been a success.
And their responsibility, I mean, the commission's, is to help manage the river and its fisheries. And what does that mean to manage?
So there are a lot of challenges in managing a river fishery where you have 12 or 13 stocks that are listed as threatened or endangered by the Endangered Species Act. So you have to find ways to avoid those endangered runs while harvesting the healthy runs or hatchery runs that are coming back. And that requires a lot of modeling, a lot of daily monitoring of the catch, certain confidence that your pre-season estimates are correct, that you can plan some fishing in advance. And it takes a lot of coordination between the states and with the National Marine Fisheries Service, which sets the limits as to interactions with those endangered stocks. There are just a lot of components that come together to allow fisheries to happen on the Columbia. And that's that complicated management that is required. And yet we still have viable commercial and recreational fisheries and tribal fisheries that allow salmon recovery while creating useful harvest.
It's a real balancing act, isn't it?
It's extremely complicated. Extremely.
Well, you fished commercially for a long time yourself. So what got you started in fishing?
Well, my grandfather worked on fishing boats since the 1940s. And when my brother and I were getting out of high school, my brother's older than I am, he got each of us opportunities on purse seine salmon vessels to do summer work to earn our way through college. And so that was kind of how we got started. My brother fished Alaska and the San Juans. I only went as far as the San Juans in my fishing experiences. And but it was a really enjoyable way to fish. It was a great kind of job. Yeah, back then I could make enough money to pretty much pay for my college education. And so my grandfather getting me started was the key. And then just deciding that I liked it enough. Not everybody likes it, but most people that I know love their commercial fishing experiences, whether they do it for a career or not.
If you're just joining us, this is KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, and I am Marianne Wagner, today's host of Coastal Cafe, and we're speaking with Robert Sudar, salmon wholesaler. So Robert, you did mention that during college you fished further north in and around the San Juan Islands. Has commercial fishing in Washington changed much since the 1970s?
Yes, it's light years different than what it was back then. Part of that is the result of the Bolt decision, which provided more access for tribal communities to the available harvest of salmon. Part of that is because of the endangered species listings that I mentioned for salmon returns in various areas. It's not just the Columbia River that has those. Puget Sound has them. There are some on the coast. And really some of the most constraining ones are in Puget Sound and the coast more than the runs in the Columbia. And we used to fish with in the San Juan Islands, targeting pink and sockeye salmon runs that were headed to the Fraser River. Most of that fishery is gone due to agreements with Canada to allow them to harvest more of their fish produced on the Fraser in exchange for allowing more of the coho and chinook produced in Washington to get back down to local fisheries down here. And it just, there have been changes in more fish passed on to the recreational fishery instead of to the commercial fishery. It's just been a real huge list of changes that have occurred over those 50 years in terms of how salmon are managed and in terms of the strength of the runs to some extent too, and even which runs are coming back better now than they did then and which aren't.
So which runs are coming back stronger? Name a few.
Yeah, so the dominant Chinook run on the Columbia River is the Upriver Bright Run, which is bound for the Hanford Reach area up by the Tri-Cities. And that is actually the biggest Chinook run on the West Coast. And it is what fuels fisheries from Northern California to Alaska, really, in terms of Chinook fisheries. That is kind of the indicator stock that a lot of those fisheries target. A large percentage, upwards of 75 to 80% of the troll salmon caught in Alaska are actually not Alaska stocks. They're stocks from British Columbia and Oregon and Washington. And the Columbia River salmon are a big portion of that. And so that's one stock that's improved. The sockeye run on the Columbia, even though we don't fish commercially for that very much as a run, it's grown a lot over the last 15 years. The summer Chinook run bound for the Upper Columbia has been rebuilt over the last 50 years. In Puget Sound, the chum fishery in the fall is larger than it used to be. But we've also had some regressions, like I mentioned, in terms of the fisheries for Fraser pink and sockeye salmon and coho fisheries in Puget Sound. And it hasn't all been progress, but in some cases there have been improvements.
In recent years, there's great concern, and rightfully so, about the health of our southern resident orcas who are suffering from a combination of factors, and one of those being hunger. And the news coverage says that there are not enough Chinook salmon for them to eat. I've read that here and there. From your perspective as a wholesaler, are local fishermen working with the orcas' whale needs, and how does the Department of Fish and Wildlife navigate this issue with fishermen?
Well, in Puget Sound, Chinook are a recreational priority fish. So there isn't much non-tribal commercial harvest in Puget Sound of Chinook salmon. The recreational fishery does take some, and I know that they're managed by areas somewhat in reflection of where the orcas are apt to be. Most of the tribal fisheries happen closer to their to the rivers where the fish are produced. In the ocean, the troll fishery competes with the orcas to some extent, but the National Marine Fisheries Service and the state take that into account in terms of impacts on orca food availability. On the Columbia, our fish are in the river and no longer available to the orcas. So we fish adult fish, they're past the orcas, they are not available as food any longer. And so our fishery does not impact food for orcas. It would if we were fishing to the point where runs were declining because of our fisheries, but that's not the case. And so we don't impact orca food in our Columbia River fisheries, even though the fish that we catch the most of are Chinook salmon. One thing that's shown a relationship in the last 30 years is that the decline in hatchery Chinook production is fairly similar to the decline in orca populations. And so there's been some discussion and some action by Fish and Wildlife to increase hatchery salmon production to provide more fish for orcas and for fishermen in view of that relationship.
That's fascinating. I didn't know about that connection. Thank you for sharing that. And it's fascinating, too, to understand that the Columbia River fishery is not impacting orca diet. It's really a separate issue. They're out there in the ocean feeding and not up the river. So that's a really good point. Thanks, Robert.
Yeah, I just want to add one thing there. We found in the last 10 years through some tagging experiments that I think Sea Grant was part of that, actually, that in the winter, the orca pods often congregate near the mouth of the Columbia River, probably catching early returning spring Chinook to the Columbia River. And they do that consistently, and it probably reflects the fact that those are very nutrient-rich salmon that are some of the most available at that time of year. And so they are eating Columbia River salmon off the mouth of the river, but they are not any harvest that happens in the river is after those fish have moved past the orcas.
That's an excellent point. Do you have a takeaway message for consumers in Washington who want to try Washington caught seafood but hesitate because of their concern for the orcas?
Well, I think that our fisheries are managed carefully so that that isn't a conflict. And if you have a concern, you should ask your local purveyor where the local salmon are coming from. That's the best solution. There are several fisheries that have been identified as not impacting orca seafood population, and the Columbia River fisheries are one of those. And so I would say that the starting point is talking to your local fish provider. And you can also contact the Department of Fish and Wildlife and ask them. That would be another source. But it's mostly a matter of education and getting the word out that there are fisheries that aren't impacting orca food supplies.
Well, thank you. And you have been a commercial fishery advisor to both the Washington Department of Fisheries and the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife. And what are these agencies responsible for?
So originally, Department of Fisheries managed commercial species like salmon, which are still listed as a food fish rather than a game fish. And Fish and Wildlife managed, I think it was just the Department of Game back then, they managed hunting, and they managed species like steelhead, which are a game fish. But those agencies were merged about 30 years ago. And as a result, the management of food fisheries came under the Fish and Wildlife Commission, which is a 9-member citizen panel. And I think that's created some problems because it has created less of a realization that salmon are a food fish and should have a role in harvest for the public, the general public, and not just for the recreational public. And we were concerned as an industry when that merging happened, and I think the results have shown that it hasn't really helped salmon, and it certainly hasn't helped the members of the public who don't want to fish for their fish themselves, who want to get it from commercial fishermen.
And what is the role of commercial salmon fisheries in Washington?
So our role is to work with the managers to harvest effectively and with conservation in mind, and avoiding listed stocks, focusing on healthy hatchery and wild stocks, and providing local fish to the marketplace. I can bring fish to the Columbia less than a day of harvest, often within a day of harvest. And that really isn't available from distant water fisheries like Alaska. And also, we know exactly where our fish are coming from. We have a good idea of which stocks we're fishing for. There's just a lot of advantages to local fisheries in the marketplace. And I think that that's something that has been lost in over the years in conveying that message to the public, that these are publicly owned fish. Hatcheries are produced through federal and local utility monies. They don't come from licenses. They come from everybody pays into the management of hatcheries. Everybody owns those fish. And having a commercial harvest is a reasonable use of a food resource like salmon.
Well, speaking of local fisheries, October is National Seafood Month. And can you give us a little bit of advice and tell us where our listeners can find fresh Washington seafood if they want fish for dinner tonight?
Well, you should be able to find some coho and Chinook salmon from the coast. There is a little bit coming off the Columbia River right now too, actually, in some select areas down by Astoria. They're having a pretty good coho run, so some of those fish should be in the marketplace. As I mentioned, rockfish are always there. Even Costco sells rockfish at a good price. So you just have to get it in a big amount, like everything else at Costco. So there are, this isn't really the peak of local seafood harvesting, but there are quite a few fisheries going on. It's important that the public, if they're interested in these local fish, that they ask their vendors if they have local fish, and if not, why not? And can they get local fish? Because in the larger marketing world, it's easy to just bunch things together as salmon, Chinook salmon or silver salmon and sockeye salmon and not really specify where they come from. But that's something that the public should be asking if they have an interest in that.
Right. We should be able to ask our vendors, where did this salmon come from? Is it local Washington? And you can request that, right? You can do that.
Absolutely. I would say that's a very fair question to ask. Just like asking how old is the fish? Is it fresh or frozen? You should also be able to ask where it came from.
Well, thank you. And thanks for joining us during National Seafood Month, Robert, and for giving us insight into the world of Washington State's active and healthy commercial fishing business. I want to thank you for joining us.
And thank you very much for inviting me. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
This is Marianne Wagner, and you've been listening to Coastal Cafe, a joint production of Washington Sea Grant at the UW College of the Environment and KPTZ 91.9 FM. Washington Sea Grant helps people and marine life thrive by providing research, technical expertise, and education that support the conservation of our ocean and coastlines. And I'd like to thank our station manager, Larry Stein, and production engineer, Jared Dufresne. And as always, a special shout out to the band Kooeaks for sharing their music with us at the open and close of this program. And thank you for listening. Have a good day. Ha tu asi ku ha.